And welcome now to the midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and welcome back after many years to Stephen Isserlis.
Thank you.
In Madison to perform with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night and Saturday night and Sunday afternoon in a program that includes Jennifer Higdon's Loco and no less than Dvorak's New World Symphony, and then in the middle, Dmitri Kabalevsky's Cello Concerto Number 2. Number 1 is one of those three youth concertos.
That's right.
But number 2 is something else entirely different, not for the student.
Not at all. No, it's a real 20th century spectacular concerto. It was written for one of my two greatest cello heroes, Daniel Shafran, which is how I heard it when I was a teenager, because Shafran recorded it with Kabalevsky conducting. And I just fell in love with that recording. And, of course, I'm dead. Listened to it for many years because I think I imitated it enough at the time. I spent quite a bit of my life trying to stop imitating Daniel Shafran, genius though he was. It's a big piece. It's almost half an hour, and it's full of thrills, somehow musical thrills. It's so exciting. It's exciting to play, and I hope exciting to listen to, and it's got a big alto sax solo, and every section of the orchestra gets their virtuoso moment. It's a great piece. I don't know why it's not played more often.
Well, it could be said of much of what Kabalevsky wrote. He's just one of those composers you don't hear so often, but wonderful stuff and quite a variety of things too.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem, at least for Russians, is a lot of Russians hated him because apparently he behaved very badly to Shostakovich and things like that. And he was, I don't know, I heard of somebody who actually liked him, but said he should not be allowed to open his mouth in company because he was a social disaster. And somehow he became very unpopular in Russia, and you know, so many Russians left Russia and sort of spread this bad reputation around the world. I don't know what he was like as a man. I can't judge, as the wonderful composer Shedrin said. It's complicated. I asked him about Kabalevsky. Oh, uh-huh. He said it's complicated. But the music is fabulous. I've just been playing his cello sonata over here in America too a couple of times last week. And that's also a fantastic piece. He's really underrated. And audiences love him too. He's, you know, immediately appealing without being cheap.
that's a good distinction to make, isn't it? Because we do run into both from time to time. Do you have a sense of his personality from this concerto?
Well, I remember Vladimir Ashkenazy, with whom I played it. He wanted to play it because he heard it on the radio, not played by me. And he said to his wife at the time, he said, "This is where Kabalevsky lets out his inner sadness." And, you know, this is him being personal rather than writing for Soviet Youth or whatever. This is Kabalevsky himself. I mean, there are some very sad and beautiful lyrical moments. But as I said, there's a lot of excitement and drama as well.
What of your personality comes out in this performance that we'll be hearing?
I don't know. I think, you know, every time I play anything, some of my personality comes out, unfortunately.
Some of the witticisms perhaps creep into this at some point. So
it's not a funny piece. It's a fun piece to listen to at times because, you know, you hear how he's giving every moment, every member of the orchestra their moment. So it's fun, but I wouldn't call it funny. No, there's a lot of funny, great music. I mean, when I play Beethoven, it sometimes makes me laugh out loud, even Bach sometimes. But
truly,
I wouldn't say, oh yes, there's very funny moments, especially Beethoven. Beethoven and Haydn are both absolutely hilarious, I think. Incredibly funny.
Sort of in a big way.
I wouldn't call Bach incredibly funny, but there's certainly humour in his music. I can't really see any humour in this Kabalevsky concerto. That's not what it's about. But as I say, it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable to play, although I have to say it's quite challenging, but it's also, the challenges are enjoyable. Shostakovich is the same. When you play a Shostakovich concerto, it's very virtuoso. And in Shostakovich's case, I think both cello concertos are very tragic in their completely different ways, but they're also fun to play.
Well, Shostakovich does, however, have many moments of humor, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Kabalevsky does too, just not in this piece.
Well, that's true. The other cello concerto, the one that's part of the three youth concertos, just sparkling, a lot of sparkling moments in those. But we are seeing him as he was writing, in 1964, fairly late for Kabalevsky. Well, we have some of your vintage recordings here, mm-hmm. and it's
you
always
made me tremble.
It's always fun for me to see the reaction of performers, wonderful performers who are listening to their stuff from.
God, I probably won't listen
from from years ago.
Sorry, I could. It's very rude, I know. Maybe I shouldn't say it, but one famous musician once said to me that for him, musicians listening to their own recordings are like dogs sniffing at what they've just left on the sidewalk.
Well, I would hate to think that would be a universal truth. And let's try to transcend that right now with some Haydn, the aforementioned Haydn, and his Cello Concerto in D, which is one of your first recordings. This, we got it back in 1998 here at WPR.
I wish it were one of my first.
And this, this, I believe, is the finale from that concerto. And also you'll be hearing the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, led by Roger Norrington, with my guest, cellist Stephen Isserles. Thank you. There you have the finale from the Cello Concerto in D by Haydn, the soloist Stephen Isserlis, my guest here in the studio today, and he'll be performing with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night and Saturday night and Sunday afternoon at the Overture Center in Madison, the Kabalevsky Cello Concerto No. 2. This is totally a field, but I can't resist having read about one of your very favorite musicians, and he would be the last that anybody in a group of 2,000 would guess, and that would be the great harpist
Harpo Marx.
Yeah,
not sure he'd be the last. Many classical musicians love him.
Do they?
Oh yeah. Actually, it was interesting because I actually did a BBC radio documentary about it, and we went to interview some harpists and just to ask what they thought of him from a professional point of view, and they said actually he's outstanding and very original.
Truly.
Yeah. And his son Bill is one of my favorite people in the world. He's I think 87 now. He's
wrote a piece
adorable.
For you. Bill did he write a piece for you?
He did, many years ago, called Friends for Cello and Harp. That's true. And then I lost touch with him a bit, and then I went to see him. I had a day off in Los Angeles, so I went for this BBC documentary, and I interviewed him for 3 hours about his dad. And afterwards, he said he kept dreaming about Harpo because he hadn't actually talked about him that much for years. And he's adorable, Bill.
And, Harpo was somebody who was very different on camera than in real life, apparently.
Yeah, but they loved him on camera and off camera.
Oh, for sure.
I think he was less different than some people. He had that same innocence and childish humor. But he loved music of Fauré, anybody who loves the music of Fauré is okay in my book.
Sure.
Any friend of Fauré's is a friend of mine. Fauré is a jolly good fellow. he loved classical music.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned humor in Bach, and I don't know if we'll find any in this particular Gigue that you have recorded.
Joy, anyway.
Joy, for sure, yeah. Those six cello solo suites of Bach have become almost like a touchstone for cellists to pick up ever since, I guess, Casals discovered them.
Well, he sort of rediscovered them. I mean, they were never actually lost, but he really popularized them. Over lockdown, I wrote a book about the Bach suites, which came out shortly after the pandemic, and that was my biggest pandemic project. It saved me, actually, because I had about 100 concerts cancelled. So I would have gone into a major depression, but actually writing that book saved me. And and the sixth suite, because one chapter of the book is about how I feel, and I could easily be completely wrong, but I do feel that the six suites tell the story of the life of Christ, and the sixth suite is the resurrection.
Fascinating.
So it has that sort of joy, and I think you can feel it, even in the Gigue. Thank you.
the gigue, the finale to the sixth of the six solo cello suites by Johann Sebastian Bach, as played by my guest, Stephen Isserles. And another composer who at least part of his repertory is not that well known, it seems to me, even though much of his instrumental music was very song-like at times, Frédéric Chopin. You don't hear his actual songs that often.
Well, I think it's partly because they're in Polish, and so few singers or anybody else speak or sing in Polish. I suspect that's part of the reason, and they really need to be in Polish. Or, in the case of the song I think you're going to play, I think that one really goes on the cello. And normally I don't think songs should be played on instruments because you miss the words so much, but when nobody understands the words anyway and it's a beautiful melody, then why not?
And this song is called Melancholy, roughly speaking.
That's not the Polish title, but we won't try that. From his Polish songs, Opus 74.
Stephen Isserles. Well, it does have Chopin's style all over it, doesn't it?
Definitely. And that was, by the way, Dénes Vajon, Hungarian pianist, playing an 1851 Erard piano. So a piano just made two years after Chopin died.
It is said that, before you go, it is said that the cello among the stringed instruments is the one that most closely approximates the human voice. That would certainly be the case there.
The human voice is the instrument that most closely approximates to the cello. Actually, all human voices, because, of course, we can go from pretty low bass to very high soprano. I mean, I think it's scientifically proven now that the cello is by far the greatest instrument in the world.
Especially when you play it, and when you play some of the cellos you play, too, strads and that kind of thing. Well, Stephen Isserlis, it has been a pleasure.
Thank you. See you in, if the same rate, see you in 2040.
Okay, we'll hold that spot for you. He's going to be playing with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night, and Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, the Dmitri Kabalevsky Cello Sonata Number 2.
Concerto.
Yes, thank you.